a robot.
I've seen
who
this.
Who can do gymnastics.
Yeah. And why are they teaching it to do gymnastics?
So there were several boxes. And it, well, first it does the parkour thing where it
Great.
Jumps up on the boxes.
So now there's nowhere I can go.
Right.
Because previously I was just going to parkour my way away from the robot apocalypse, but now I can't.
Yeah, you can't.
Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
So I want to start with the Tales from Dirt Campfire. Tales yes. is a segment that we do where we find tales on the internet of the paranormal, fake lore, folklore, ghost stories.
And scary stuff.
And we retell them here around the digital campfire. So
gather around, listeners.
So this is an interesting one. This is a Jewish horror story.
Oh, okay.
Involving a creature. Yes, involving a creature called a Dybbuk. So we've talked about a Dybbuk before. It's an evil spirit from Jewish mythology that attaches itself to a living person's soul and can cause mental confusion and the creation of a separate alien personality within the person. Dybbuks are generally considered souls that, because of the enormity of their sin, are not allowed to transmigrate. So instead, they seek refuge in the body of a living person.
What, are they supposed to just, like, float around?
It's a wandering soul, and if it can get into you,
all right,
it will do so. There's even, and I didn't know this, because I thought this was only a Catholic thing, there's also a Jewish literature on how to exorcise a Dybbuk from a person who's possessed by a Dybbuk. And then you redeem the lost soul, the Dybbuk, which I think is cool, or you cast it into hell.
Okay.
Right? So there's an opportunity for you to save the Dybbuk. And the term Dybbuk comes from the word Hebrew that means cling.
Wow.
Yeah, how cool is that?
Yep. Wow.
So,
so if you have this needy boyfriend,
yes,
it could be like this Dybbuk.
So not only is that what I told you is a Dybbuk, it can cling to a person, but it can also apparently cling to an object.
Really?
Yeah, and that's what this story is about.
Okay.
Right. It's called the Dybbuk Box, and this is a true story. Right. Yeah. I found this is all over the internet. This item actually at one point was on sale on eBay because the owner, you know, when you have an object that is haunted or inhabited by a demon or a soul, you can't destroy it generally because you don't know what's going to happen when you destroy the object. And sometimes when you try to give it away, it comes right back to you.
Yeah.
So,
and it's also awful for you to pass it on to somebody else
without saying something about it. So This is the box emerges. This is the first part of the story. So there's a woman named Havala who acquired the box. She was in Spain, and then she immigrated to the United States, and she kept the box hidden away in a sewing cabinet. In 2003, after her death, her family had an estate sale where they put the box out for sale. But it was so beautiful, and I'll describe it. It's like, it was so beautiful, like hand-carved and all this kind of stuff, that the guy named Kevin Manis, when he wanted to purchase it, he first spoke to the family and was like, did you mean to put this item out? Which is nice. Like, did you really want to sell this item, or is this just something that you have out? And they were like, no, we want to sell this item. Please take it. Like, we want it out of here. So then he did a little research, and he learned that the woman, Havla, had the box since she was a young woman. He offered to return the box at one point, and the granddaughter of Havala said, please take it. So this should have been like a red flag for him right away. She explained that it had been in her grandmother's sewing room, out of reach and unopened for years because of the Dybbuk inside of it. So he knew this item was haunted.
Okay.
All right. So there's a documentary. Kevin Manis, the guy who originally brought it from Havala's granddaughter, explained his experiences. He had a furniture and antique store. He brought the Dybbuk box into his furniture store, and he went out, and then his assistant came running out that something was inside the store smashing up everything. Just destroying everything. So when they went inside, they found the doors were still locked. There was no sign of anyone having come or gone. No intruder. And they found crushed light bulbs and the smell of cat urine. Even though there was never an animal in the shop ever.
So he walks in with the box, puts it in there.
Puts it in there, goes out to... He got a call from someone, so he goes out.
But his assistant was
in. His assistant stays in. She comes running out and it's like something is smashing up. There's someone in there smashing things up.
Okay.
But nothing happened. So the box, it's like a little wooden box. He opened it. Inside of it, there were two pennies from the 1920s, a lock of blonde hair bound by a cord, another lock of darker hair bound by a cord, a small statue engraved with the word Shalom, mm-hmm. which is like a good thing.
Yeah.
And then a small golden wine goblet.
Okay.
A dried rosebud and a four-legged candle holder. And that's when he realized that there's more to this box
than meets the eye.
Okay. So although he didn't initially believe what people were saying about the box, he started having really bad nightmares. And then he was having dreams about friends of his turning into demonic beasts and like beating him,
oh.
like mercilessly, while the box was still in his house. So eventually he took the box to his mother's house for a birthday present, gave it to her. That same day she had a stroke. When she recovered, she scribbled on a piece of paper, because I guess she had lost a lot of her motor skills. She wrote on a little piece of paper, hate gift. So, and I was wondering if it's hate gift as like an adjective, or hate gift was like, I hate this gift.
Right.
And she rejected the gift. She was like, get this out of here. He then gives it to his sister, who had it for 1 week. And she took it back, and she was like, I locked this thing up, and every time I came back, it was open. So then he gave it to his brother. Right, the brother returned it also. He was complaining that when he was near the box, he smelled jasmine. But his wife said that the box smelled of cat urine, and that the area around the box smelled of urine as well.
But he smelled jasmine.
Yeah, okay. It's interesting. So then Manus took it back. His girlfriend said, you got to get this out of here. He sold it to a middle-aged couple.
Nice. Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. But he's informing everybody about it. He sold it to a couple. And then he came home a couple days later, and it was back on his doorstep with a note saying, this has a bad darkness.
Okay.
So they didn't even want their money back. They were just like, we don't want this anymore. So he was, at this point, he said he wanted to destroy the cabinet. But as we know, you can't obviously like.
You can't just do that. You don't know what you're letting out.
Yeah, you don't know what you're doing. So then he put it on eBay. And he said, this is eBay post. I would destroy this in a second, but I don't really have an understanding of what I may or may not be dealing with. I'm afraid if I destroy this cabinet, that whatever has come in the cabinet, what is in the cabinet, may stay here with me. I have been told that there are people who shop on eBay that understand these kinds of things and specifically look for these items. If you're one of these people, please, please, please buy this cabinet and do whatever you do with a thing like this. Please help. So he sold it. He relayed all of the person who purchased it, he told all of the experiences, the background of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the cat urine, the jasmine, all that kind of stuff. So the last person to buy it was a guy, a student at Truman State University in Missouri, which I thought was interesting because I did a semester abroad program. It was through them. I've never been there, but that's who the program was through. It was a guy on eBay called Joseph Nietzsche. He claims the cabinet caused him and his roommates to suffer health problems. Light bulbs got broken. There was an infestation, and there were odd smells. His hair fell out. He went to the doctor. The doctor said, there's nothing wrong with you. So then he sold it.
Wow.
To another guy, the director of a museum of osteopathic medicine. And he thought that the box was like a historical puzzle. That guy, too, succumbed to health problems, hives, coughing up blood, head-to-toe welts. And so he decided to leave it in a storage unit. One night in the storage unit, a smoke alarm went off. He went to see what was going on. No smoke.
Really?
There was just the Dibbit box.
Come and get me.
Yeah, he brought it home, started doing research, fell asleep near the computer, woke up and saw shadows moving across the wall away from him. So after a while, he began wondering if there was something wrong with the story of this box. Mm-hmm. He started like scrutinizing and looking into it and stuff like that. But yeah, this is like this really weird cabinet with a hair in it. Pennies.
So nobody knows what
that means. Like, no one knows what it is, but they think that there's a Dybbuk attached to it.
Mm.
So maybe what happened is someone exorcised a Dybbuk, and instead of banishing it to hell or being able to save it, they attached it to this cabinet.
And then lost track of it.
Yep. Over
somebody
time.
Somebody was like, this is beautiful.
But it's interesting because the woman, originally, she brought it with her when she emigrated to the United States in, what year was it? It was quite early. It doesn't say when she came, but we know it was quite some time ago. It's fascinating that you would bring that with you.
They should bring it to those demonologists who have the museum where they keep the Annabelle doll.
So I don't know what it is now. Apparently, there was a woman called Sophie at some time who trapped the spirit and who helped Havala, the original owner, trap the spirit in the box. Maybe that's why Havala was taking it everywhere with her.
Yeah.
Because she was somehow responsible for this Dybbuk box. So there it is.
And I wonder, was she experiencing horrible things all this time? Or did she have a way of,
I don't
of
know.
Dealing with it?
Maybe if you're, I mean, that couple that you always talk about who has the haunted, the Museum of Haunted Items, or they secure haunted items and they keep them, they're immune.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
So maybe they have some special
power,
or they know how to deal with it.
Right, right.
And maybe that's why this woman had it.
Yeah, because she knew how to deal with it.
And maybe she didn't tell anyone else about it or how to deal with it. So that's my tale.
That's scary.
Yeah.
I tell you, I was creeped out. I have like, you know, my hair is long. And it was just like kind of like moved as I moved. I'm like, what's over there?
The Dybbuk box. Yeah. If you go on, if you Google Dybbuk box, you will see it. It looks creepy.
Yeah.
It looks like it's hand wrought and all these items. It's really kind of cool. So that was an interesting Jewish horror story.
I tell you, the scary things like scare the bejesus out of me at this point. I watched 5 minutes, not even 5 minutes of Lights Out.
What's Lights Out?
Lights Out. I can't tell you any more than what I saw because I was like, I'm not
watching.
Well,
what happens? Do a movie in 2 seconds.
Okay. Some people are in like this like warehousey kind of business, whatever they're doing. And it's like, yeah, bye, gotta go. And the woman is walking through turning out the lights because they're leaving. And she turns out the light and something ran by a rack of clothes. And she was like, turn on the light. Like, what was that? Yeah. And she was like, you know, I don't see anything. What goes on her way. And then she goes into this other room. Walks in the door, and there's a door right on the other side. And that door is open. And she turns out the light in the room, and suddenly there was a silhouette of this person standing
in the
doorway. Right.
Hell no.
And it looked like a woman with long hair and a dress, like a mid-thigh dress, but it was standing and was like menacing. It was like almost like it was some kind of menacing, like, standing like a man, you know,
but ready to fight.
Yeah.
But it was a woman's shape.
Yeah. And so it was really weird. And so she was like, you know, so she turns on the light, of course, you know.
It's gone.
She turns off the light. It's closer.
What?
No. Turns on the light. It's gone. And she's like, how did it get to the middle of the room and suddenly be there?
Why are you still in the room?
She turns off the light. And then it's right in front of her. She turns on the light and it's
gone.
Gone. So she's like, you know.
Why would you wait? I mean, you saw how quickly it could move and you see that it only moves when the light's off.
Yeah.
So keep the light on and get the F out of there.
Yeah, but she's like, what do I see? You know, but
what am I seeing? Who cares?
Exactly. That's when I turned off the movie.
Yeah. Because in this day and age, in our culture, like, I'm not going to assume that it's any kind of a demon. It's just another crazy-ass person, and I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to, you know, scrutinize what it is.
So, my apartment was being redone, and I was staying at another place.
Mm-hmm.
And this...
Is that place empty?
The place is empty, and I'm staying there, you know, temporarily as my apartment is being
just
redone by myself. Just
little all by herself.
You know, and you're a new place, and you hear all kinds of creaks and stuff, and I can hear the tree hitting the fire escape, and...
The noises are slightly different.
Everything's different, but all the doors are on springs, including the front door, and the light switches across the room.
What?
So when you turn off the light, you have to hustle to that front door. You can't even, like, you can't, because it's shut. And if you try to keep it open, it doesn't stay open.
That's a really bad design.
I tell you, I cannot, I have to prop that door open and turn on a light, because every time I think of the stupid 5 minutes of that movie that I watched.
I can't even believe you watch it, too. And you know you get scared.
I know.
It's fun to be scared, though. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah, that's not exciting when it's late at night. And you have to, so when you go into the place, you come in with your keys and your stuff, and now you have to get across the room and turn on the light.
That's terrible design.
Yeah.
I would put something by the door. There's got to be, like, an outlet by the door. You could put a light there or something like that and take a light from your place and put it up there, because that's ridiculous. Or I might just keep a light on, because it's not your, you know, regular place. I would just, like, keep a bathroom light on or,
what if
you
I
know.
Come home and it's the light's off?
I don't know. Yeah, that's the thing.
And it could be like the super going in there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So I'm screwed at that point.
Yeah. What are you going to do? I mean, there's definitely moments. We always make fun of the people in the, you know, in the horror films, like, why are they doing it? But there's so many times when I reflect on my life when I'm like, why did I do that? Like, one time I told you I was in an eight-story building all by myself in Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah.
And I heard something in a bathroom.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, let me go check that out. And that's exactly what the people in the, you know, in the horror movies think. And the mouse ran out, and I was like, oh. And then the horror movie, something else
comes out. You're relieved. Once you have that sigh of relief, you turn.
But I'm not going to lie. I've totally been in the center of eviction at night and run before. But you can't run too fast because if you fall, then you're screwed. Yeah. All right. What do you have?
Hey, You Know It is a free podcast, free of charge, FOC.
Free as a bird, free falling even. Well, it's free for listeners.
We put a lot of hard work into this.
Editing and online hosting is frankly thirsty work. It gets pretty dry in this studio, and you know we love a tasteful white wine. If you like our style, consider buying a gala drink. We've added a PayPal donation button to heyyouknowit.com so you can show us some love with a one-time or recurring donation to cover a little something from the vine.
For $5, you'll be hooking us up with a happy hour glass of tasteful white wine, a 4-ounce pour. For a 10 spot, we can split a bottle of wine from the Bodega across the street. For $15, we can kick it with a jug, because who are we kidding? For $25, you'll be making our dreams come true with a box of tasteful white wine concealed with a Mylar skin. Box of wine.
Speaking of being doomed, we got we have a listener email.
Awesome. So if you want to interact with us via the old-fashioned email, now it's old-fashioned, I think, you can email us at heyyouknowit@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And we'll read your missive on the air. We will not give anyone your personal information. We will not keep your information.
Well, I say doomed because the subject is doomed.
Well, that's
sounds accurate.
We are doomed.
And this is from Sid, who emailed us.
Awesome. Sid, we haven't heard from Sid in a while. Yeah, what's going on?
Sid says, hey, guys. Apparently, Boston Dynamics, who should just change their name to Skynet already.
Yes, evil overlords.
Didn't get your warning and went ahead with this nonsense. And then there were two video clips, one of this, of two different robots doing their thing.
New robots?
It was nice. At least it was nice listening to your podcast in the months before the robot uprising.
Yeah, thanks for being with us.
Pessimistically, Sid.
Wow.
So thank you, Sid, so much for that. So the first one was a robot named Atlas.
Yeah. I've seen
who
this.
Who can do gymnastics.
Yeah. And why are they teaching it to do gymnastics?
So there were several boxes. First it does the parkour thing where it jumps up on the boxes.
So now there's nowhere I can go.
Right.
Because previously I was just going to parkour my way away from the robot apocalypse, but now I can't.
Yeah, you can't. Because it goes up on one box, you're like, damn, it jumped up on the...
It jumped up? I didn't watch the video.
It jumped up
with
on
two
the
feet.
Box. Yes. With 2 feet, propelled itself, jumped up, then jumped on the next box, which was higher, and then the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And then jumped off and did a somersault and stuck the landing.
Why? Why are you showing
and
it to people?
And it was like, am I looking at a robot suit with a human gymnastic person?
Oh, wow, they've made incredible advances.
That's what they call a gymnastic person, is really a gymnast.
A gymnast. One who gymnizes.
Yeah.
They have made incredible advances in the past year over at Boston Dynamics.
Boston Dynamics.
Wow.
And then,
I wonder if I can get a sticker. 1 year, Katie got me stickers from Boston Dynamics. They sent them to us. They were really cool.
Yes, I wrote to them and they sent stickers. So, I'm sure you can.
I could get a re-up
and
with a new sticker with Atlas on it.
The other one was the Spot robot, the one that looked like a dog, that acted like a dog, came up, sniffed the camera, ran around a thing. Again, moving like an animal.
Oh, wow. They're
Boston
getting good.
So
what's interesting for me is I guess they're trying to move these robots out of Uncanny Valley.
Yes.
To the point where we will no longer be able to tell the difference between robot movement and human movement.
That was what was so disturbing about these clips is that it was so realistic.
The sad thing about it is if this is what these guys are doing, and I feel like Boston Dynamics is fairly above board.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably have some kind of ethics system that they work within. But how many other people are doing this that have no ethics?
Mm-hmm. And who's giving them the money?
I'm looking at you, Russia, who already had a robot that they armed with a gun.
Yeah.
Like a year ago.
Yeah, and who's giving the money?
Yes.
And who wants these things?
And what do they want them for?
Right.
We are still really trying to work on basic, sanitation for a lot of people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So to eliminate things like dysentery and diarrhea and, you know, working on things like malaria. But no. This is where, you know.
All right, let's take this angle too. Okay, with the robots. People are buying robots.
Mm-hmm, I'm not.
Companies are buying robots to do a lot of work.
Yeah.
Okay, so for example, say they develop robots who cut down on a lot of labor in hospitals.
Okay.
Say they did a cleaning or mm-hmm. whatever. So all the hospitals around the United States now were like, we can cut costs and have these robots come in
so
and clean.
So they're replacing like... just the cleaners?
Yeah, this is hypothetical. Okay. I'm just trying to come up with like
where it's going to go.
Right. Nobody can really buy these robots because they're so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So in this culture of renting, remember we rent the runway?
Oh, yeah.
We rent car share.
Partial ownership, sharing, the sharing economy, all that kind of stuff.
So companies that have the robots are going to lease them out to these different
mm-hmm.
corporations.
Like
or businesses.
A copy machine.
Yeah. And they're responsible for programming them. So if you're not in charge of that, this is part of your staff.
So who is? Boston Dynamics.
With a company that rents them out, right?
Yeah.
And, all right, so imagine now you're in another industry where you're very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody is, so you're working at these hotels. Mm-hmm. And maybe you took these cleaning robots to the hotels. What's to stop Hilton, say, from bribing the robot company to kind of
tweak it a little bit? You mean sabotage?
Sabotage another company.
Industrial sabotage.
Yes, because these companies that have the robots are in charge of the programming. So your staff is now out of control.
My question is that, so say you're replacing all the cleaners,
mm-hmm.
right, with robots.
Mm-hmm.
The argument is that, you know, those people who are on the side of, you know, the technologists, that, well, now those people are freed up to do something else. But
mm-hmm.
it's like, well, what are they going to do?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's the other part. Then there should
then
be the
what?
Thing of creating other things that humans can do that they would like to do in training programs.
So if we come up with, for example, because I thought you were going to say, what if the robots replace like nurses? So let's say that the robots reduce the mm-hmm. amount of nurses you have to have. Can we then send those nurses out into the community, into other places where they are needed?
Right.
And will they be compensated in a way that reflects all of the work and study and effort they've gone through to become a nurse mm-hmm. in the first place? Is everyone going to get demoted?
Right.
So, I don't know, we'll see.
For those kind of complex jobs like that, they're having, I mean, despite these robots from Boston Dynamics that have this kind of motion
mm-hmm.
that they can do that, a lot of them, they say it's so complicated to get them programmed move on their own that it's really, really hard. So, like, having robots with a higher level of learning
mm-hmm.
And execution, we're far, far away from that.
Yeah, because we saw a couple of years ago how they had these robot waiters, but they couldn't even carry a bowl of soup.
They couldn't.
Without spilling it.
So things like that. So they think, oh, yeah, waiting tables, we can get robots to do it. You can't.
No.
We're so far
there
from
are
that.
Too many, I think, too many little things that have to happen as a waiter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a robot would be ready for the level of complexity for it. Even mm-hmm. the little stuff like, you know, you take someone's order, then you start to walk away, and they're like, you can, they want me to come back.
Yeah.
Or they see the table isn't even.
And you
even.
Ignore them anyway.
Yeah. Well, the table isn't
yeah.
even.
Yeah.
But, you know, things like that require a lot of, like, fine motor skills and, like, putting stuff together.
Yeah, the kind of decision making. So
yeah.
The thing that differentiates the something like a drone or a remote control device from a robot is the ability for the robot in the field on its own to make a decision, like to get around something. Like a Roomba is a robot.
Yeah.
Because it can sense and then make a decision.
And make
to
an
go
adjustment.
And yeah. And then shut off. Don't go down the stairs. That kind of a thing.
I think it would be
easier. A drone is a remote controlled device.
I think a drone waiter could work better than
mm-hmm.
an AI robot. Because as long as you have someone controlling some modicum of
yeah.
what's happening, it could work.
Right.
I think. All right, cool.
Okay.
So we have some, is this advice?
This is advice on advice.
Yeah, we have a listener, Michael F., who sent us a 4-pack, I think, last time of advice on advice, and we've been
yes.
weeding those out. So Advice on Advice is a segment where we find advice on the internet that stinks.
And it's unqualified.
And we improve upon it by giving our advice on advice. Or we have a fan send it in.
Yes.
So here we go.
Thank you, Michael F. Listener, who never fails to come up with something excellent.
It's always something. Last time it sparked a discussion.
Yes.
That is legend.
Yes.
In the Hey You Know It studio.
So he sends more advice. He's just heard the episode about the lady who wanted to cheat with her boss and the other lady whose brother's divorcing his wife but wants to come for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I figure there's some more weird cheating ones because you guys are the bomb. Give the bomb answers to these idiots.
Yeah, we savage those.
Yeah.
It's weird because I'm morally speaking, I'm a pretty loose person. But infidelity, I'm like, just tell your partner, be honest, and then get out of there. You know?
Okay.
Or resolve it. All right, what do we got here? Michael
F.
This
is from Dear Cupid, right?
Okay.
Okay. Someone who wants to remain anonymous says, 4 months ago, my husband came to me and confessed to an affair. This was the second time he cheated, or at least that I caught him.
Huh?
First was 10 years ago with his secretary. I forgave him then, but this time was much harder.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out the other woman was my son's wife.
What? Come on.
The mother...
Not only are you a dirty so-and-so, you're lazy. You're lazy. Really? That's as far as you went to get some strange?
The mother, in other words, of both of our grandchildren. My son...
What?
It's the mother of their grandchildren.
Oh, my goodness. I was hoping at least it was a new thing.
Mm-mm. My son was overseas, and now... in the Navy.
Great. Now you're disrespecting the troops.
We had...
this guy's a dick.
We had a big fight, and I still hate my daughter-in-law, but we agreed to work it out, not tell my son, at least until he's back.
Okay. That's probably a good idea, because when you're out there risking your life...
And you find out...
This is going on. You're not going to be able to stay focused, right?
My husband is a weak man, but I know he loves me. My son's wife...
He doesn't sound that weak.
Yeah, my son's wife, on the other hand, is a creep. She is throwing back at me that I am old and cannot please my husband, and that she has to keep all the men in our family happy.
Mm-hmm. I say, go ahead, B. Go right ahead. I'll see y'all later.
I'm at my wit's end to do with her. I love my grandchildren, but I hate their mother so much. Please help.
Wow. My husband's a weak man? No, you're a weak man. Like, you, lady, are the weak one. That's terrifying. All right, so let's review. We got a troop. While he's away, his dad tries to get some quick hum-a-da-hum-a-da.
And does.
And does from his wife. Right. And then confesses it to his own wife. And they're trying to all keep this. The three of them are going to keep this on the hush-hush.
Until
he gets back stateside.
And then the paramour in this situation, she says, I need to just keep everyone happy because you...
Yeah, because you're old. Because she's never going to get old. That's the thing. She's going to stay young and tight forever. I feel I feel really sorry for this guy. He's a Marine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm making assumptions that he's, like, probably comes home for a short period of time and then goes back out. So how is he, like, what is he, you know? He can't stick around. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
he can't stick around to kind of monitor the situation. He may even have limited time to deal with it before he's redeployed.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
She's going to die.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so mad.
Yes. I wouldn't be able to. The rage. You know what I mean? Okay. So let's hear.
So this is like kind of crowdsourcing the advice on this particular site.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so
this is like just, you know, throw your hat in the ring.
This is I don't get it. Why is everybody blaming the daughter-in-law? She has been left alone to fend for herself. And if you ask me, the man actually helped her by cooling off her fires.
Excuse me? She can have sex with anybody. Mm-hmm. Why does it have to be her father-in-law? Yeah.
People who live with their husbands have no idea what it's like to be married to a man you hardly ever see. One really has to be a saint to wait around for the husband to show up once in a while.
No, you don't. It's called a dildo. It's called porn.
Yeah.
It's called get to know yourself.
Right.
Right? Like, come on.
What if the daughter-in-law had gone to a club and picked up guys to sleep with on the side? Would that be better than sleeping with an available father-in-law?
Yes.
Yes.
You want to think about that for a second?
Yeah.
No. Yes. The answer is yes.
Obviously, the woman is not able to satisfy her man, and that's why
the mother?
And that's why he's looking for action elsewhere. No, it's not.
It's not. It's not. Sorry. I mean, that this person, this is terrible advice all around.
And if at all somebody needs to be blamed, it's the wife who is not able to satisfy her husband.
Really?
Been there, done that.
Oh. Whoa. Wow. I see. This is an area of womanhood that I don't really understand.
I don't get this.
I always preface these conversations by saying I grew up with a very strong single mom whose dating life I was never aware of. I'm sure she had her own personal life, but she never brought that to me. I never saw her being man hungry, disrespected mm-hmm. by men. I definitely didn't see that in my household. So my attitude towards men is, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle mm-hmm. kind of thing. So I don't understand these women who feel like it's not enough for them to have their dude. They got to have everybody else's yes, man, right, too, right. And that makes them more of a woman. No, it makes you a person who doesn't care about other people's feelings.
Right.
Like,
yeah, that's it.
That's all
there is to it. Yeah.
And there's nothing to be, if you're really excited because you can sleep with someone else's husband, guess what? We could all sleep with somebody else's husband.
Everybody can.
It's not a big deal. We don't.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
We don't. Because of all the messiness that comes with it. And the reality is, you can't find someone who's not with somebody.
Then
so you can only find somebody who doesn't want to specifically be with you.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You can be somebody's second, third, fourth, fifth.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
Yes.
All right. Any other crowd sources? That was terrible advice.
Yes. What a horrible situation. I know it's easy to blame the daughter-in-law in this situation.
Yeah, because it's her fault?
And she seems like a bitch, to say the least. However, your husband is even worse.
Yes.
While your daughter-in-law has betrayed her husband, your husband, on the other hand, has betrayed you.
Why would
you
sleep
with
your son
and your grandchild? That's crazy.
What if she gets pregnant?
I know.
You think they were using condoms?
Right. He doesn't sound weak to me. He seems like he's got some sort of hold over you and fronts as weak in order to continue getting away with his behavior. Your son certainly has the right to know. It is up to him how his relationship unfolds with his father after that time. You can worry about that. He is a grown man and he has the right to make that decision himself. If he ever finds out later in life, for example, if his wife confesses, then he will both hate you and your husband eternally because you never told him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the mother definitely has to tell her child what's going on. Everybody else already knows. Mm. And if I were the mother, I would, now is the time to start. If you're not in a position to leave, mm-hmm. start getting in a position to mm-hmm. leave. Get your finances together, mm-hmm. find a place. If you're not working, consider working. If you are working, shore things up. Get yourself ready. You can't stay there.
Right.
Right. You cannot stay with a man who's sleeping with your son's wife.
No.
In your face, by the way.
Yeah, I would definitely give your husband his marching orders. Do it for yourself, your son, and your grandchildren. The fact your husband and daughter-in-law have had this affair shows they're both willing to put it all on the line. Family to them must not be that important. Don't follow suit.
It's meaningless.
Yeah. Show your husband the door and tell your son. If you don't, you might end up losing out on all counts and not having a family at all.
Yeah.
But here is one of my favorite reactions. This guy chimes in.
All right. Are we going to like this one? Is this good? Is this you dirty?
So this guy writes, at 70, I have a great problem within myself. My 28-year-old stepdaughter-in-law is the greatest-looking lady to me.
Okay.
My stepson and I are best of friends and work together. I give her money all the time on the side, and she takes it and knows that I'm looking for. She knows what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
She is much stronger than I am. The reason I read these story notes about this is to try and clear my head. I also know 100% it would destroy my life. I am an American, and my whole family is Mexican. This reading has helped me more.
Oh, that's cool. Thank you, Michael F. I like that.
He's 70, and he has a thing for his 28-year-old.
She's not interested in your old sagging.
She just wants your money.
Yeah, she just wants your money.
Yeah.
These kind of things are really interesting to me. I know that you and I are the same. We don't do drama.
Right.
These are non-issues in my life. Who cares? There are so many people out there,
mm-hmm.
so many ways to, fulfill your needs mm-hmm. that you don't need to risk destroying people's lives. I think when people don't think about how this affects the other people.
Right.
What about her children?
Right.
Because you assume your children won't find out.
Yeah.
They may already know. Who knows? They may, you know, they may already know. They may find out sometime in the future. Even if you continue, I have a hard time believing that when, you know, the booty is available like that, that he's not going to try to go back there again. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when people say that, that they've cheated, this hasn't happened to me mm-hmm. before, where I've, you know, had the person confront me and been like, oh, I've been having an affair. Mm-hmm. And this is, and then, so does it mean one time? Is it a series of things? Mm-hmm. Like, in order to have an affair, isn't there, like, a lead-up? There's, like, a weird kind of a courtship period. Yeah. And then, like, where did this happen?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, in their son's and wife's bed? In their own, you know what I mean? In the home of the parents?
Right.
Like, did they go to a hotel? Was this the whole plan? Or was it just, like, a quick poke in the kitchen? Or, like, what happened? Were the kids asleep in another room? Were they, you know, I mean, it sounds awful, mm-hmm. but... It is awful.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think this is a very clear-cut one to me. The daughter-in-law is a tramp. Mm-hmm. Not because she had sex with the father-in-law. That's terrible. But because she came at the mom like that.
Yeah.
I would have knocked that bee on the floor so fast with whatever I had in my hand. That would have been another problem.
Yeah.
Like, on top of the divorce. Mm-hmm. Now I've got, like, a, you know, I've caught a case for a, some kind of abuse.
Yes.
That's crazy. Is that crazy? Well, thank you.
Thank you, Michael F.
That was juicy. I love the crowdsourcing advice. And good luck to that old poppy out there.
Yeah.
With his 70-year-old self. Giving his money away to a cute 28-year-old.
They got the four R's.
What's the four R's? Rehearse, record, rinse, or repeat.
To all that was 40th Street. Hashtag #BossLifeNYC.
I found this thing here. It's kind of a robot news. It's about AI. This was in the BBC Music Reporter. There's a woman called Taryn Southern, and she is apparently making an entire album co-written with artificial intelligence software.
Okay.
So she's making pop music. Pop music already sounds like crap.
Yeah.
And I don't know if AI can make it worse. I don't know if it can make it better either. So she's apparently a YouTube star. I don't know
if there is this. Are there stars?
I guess. Okay. I don't know. A YouTube star and a content creator. I like
content creator. So yeah, not a writer,
no,
not an actor.
Content.
Because
content, I guess, is something you consume or something that's used to sell. I don't know. I read another interesting...
I think of content like it's like oatmeal that you just serve in bowls to like on a line.
This music is probably similar to that.
Yeah.
I also object to the term maker. I was reading somewhere that it said like 75% of all makers are men. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what about all the women that, like, make stuff? Like, we sew, we crochet, we make art. Like, is that not making? Whatever. So, Taryn Southern, a YouTube star and content creator, has just released a song she wrote with the help of AI. The song is called Break Free, and it's a brooding ballad that wouldn't sound out of place on a Hunger Games soundtrack. So, how it works is there's this program, and it's an AI algorithm, and you upload different styles of music, and it analyzes them. Mm-hmm. So it analyzes, like, you know, what riffs are most likely to come up in a blues song, or what kind of sounds most likely to go with something from the Rolling Stones, or, you know, Bach, Beethoven, whatever. And then based on that, you tweak it, and then you can come up with an original song.
Okay.
So they take a lot of data, they learn the rules, and then they create the song. So they asked it to write a reggae song using Scott Joplin's The Entertainer's inspiration. And as, you know, you would expect, it sounded like shit.
Mm-hmm.
She said it takes a lot of tinkering and a lot of human collaboration. You can't just press a button and create magic. It seems like a lot easier to me to just, like, learn how to write music and play some instruments and make music yourself.
Yeah.
I'm not sure
why you need
AI to do it. So it could come up with something that sounds really generic, but it's never going to come up with, you know, I Would Die For You by Prince.
Like, you know, Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, or Jimi. Like, it's never going to come up. And I don't understand what the point of it is. She's saying that the software means that she can write a song from scratch in under an hour. But why would you want to do that? Like, isn't the beauty and the joy of creation that you take your time doing it? Sometimes you can do things quickly. Sometimes you can't.
Right.
Earlier this week, she performed Break Free live for the first time at a web summit It's live, yeah, in Lisbon, Portugal. That's the name of her song. It received enthusiastic welcome from the audience of tech heads and coders. Okay, really? That's not who I'm taking my cues for music from. But other musicians are split down the middle. Some of them are like really interested in learning about it as a tool, and others have said, why are we playing with this stuff? It's going to take our jobs.
Yeah.
I feel like we have musicians.
Yes, we have musicians.
We have musicians.
And it's the thing, like, when you're creating something, the human vessel is a huge part of it.
Yeah.
If you're going to write or sing or act or play music, are you hungry? Are you tired?
Yeah.
Are you emotionally beaten up? Are you elated?
Did you just read something in the news and it's informing
what
you're doing?
Yes, all of these things.
Did someone come in the room?
Right. All of it is informing. Did someone come in the room?
No. But all of that goes into the work.
It goes into the work. And you can't replicate that. And it adds layer and texture and richness to art.
It's bizarre. So she said AI is just a tool, like a drum machine or a synthesizer. But the message of the message of her song is human. No, it's not.
It's not.
It's not. The reality is, she said, that humans adapt. It's the tools that become irrelevant. I'm not even sure what that means.
I don't know.
I'm not sure what that means. She said, it's the heart that makes the music. She insists. I love this. Yeah. These writers, she insists, right? Directed me to a video on her YouTube called Voices in My Head. I did not check it out. But in the video, the music was created by AI, but the message is human and deeply personal. I think people will find a way to embrace it. It's inevitable. She sounds like an AI.
I don't think it's inevitable.
Yeah.
I think you can avoid it.
She said, and this is an interesting point, with her song, she gave Amper, the company that made the AI that she used, some of the back-end royalties for helping her to create the song. It's so weird. Like, as a person who dabbles in the visual arts, but who definitely does a lot of writing, this gives me the creeps.
Yeah.
I'm really not interested in art of any kind made by a machine.
Yes, and
I'm just not.
Have you come across the articles like that pop up on Facebook that are clearly written by robots?
Yes, and they're terrible.
Yeah.
And they make no sense at all. No sense at all.
It's not even, there's a huge distinction between them and people with English as a second language that
are
trying to write.
You can tell right away because there's a lack of humanity to it, right? A lack of like fundamental understanding of how, so maybe AI can, you know, artificial intelligence can understand artificial intelligence, but I don't think it can understand human intelligence. Yeah. And so there's a disconnect there. So we'll see. But it's just really interesting. I have no problem with artists using technology in their work. Mm-hmm. But I prefer the human element. I hope that in the future, as these things start to advance, because the long short of it is, and I appreciate what she's doing and I respect her opinion, but they're trying to get rid of you.
Yeah.
The people who make money off of music, the last thing they want is the singer or the songwriter.
Right. So
they've been trying to screw them since day one.
If they can get people's palates to adjust to AI music and make money off it.
Just like they got people's palates to adjust to like lame old Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
People like that because they don't know what good music is. They have no idea, you know, what good music is.
Yes.
All right. What do you got?
Okay. So, were humans to go extinct, should the species be revived?
By whom?
Whoever.
AI's not going to do it.
Yeah. All right. So think about that. Like, think all these different species that have gone the way of the dodo.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
As you will.
Well, what happened if it would happen to humans? And, you know, whatever our robot overlords found a human, you know, encased in ice.
Would they bring it back?
Yeah.
Not if they saw what we did. Like, what if they pull up some of this AI music? They're like,
but if we went extinct, I mean, for a good reason, should we come back? Just like any other thing that's extinct.
I think the main reason, I don't think anything should be brought back.
Mm.
If the question is something that is extinct should be brought back? No, it's been selected either, you know, naturally or artificially.
Mm-hmm.
And when you bring something back, is it ever really the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the lesson of Jurassic Park 1.
Yeah, right. So they had a panel of experts discuss.
Experts on what?
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you throw his name out there, I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah, right. And it was during the annual Isaac Asimov Memorial Debate.
Oh.
Okay. So.
Yeah, they do that every year. It's like the big, you know, shiny science people come out.
Right. Because he wrote the three laws of robotics that we have discussed before. Yeah. So they say, we're another intelligent life to de-extinctify humans. Would they put us in a zoo-like environment? For a sentient being, that would be extremely frightening and scary.
There are some people who think we're in a zoo-like environment right now.
Yeah. Yes.
Because this place definitely looks like a circus.
And now, right, so that's one thing. And do we deserve to be brought back?
No.
And so someone said, yes, we do.
Based on what?
Yeah.
We spent, from the moment we figured out how to, we've been trying to destroy this planet and everything on it. And each other.
Yeah. But he often opined that the science of de-extinction is already here and within reach and should be pursued.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you can do it, we should.
So, right now, Donald Trump is trying to make sure that there are no elephants left in the world by passing the legislation saying that these big game hunters can go and bring back their trophies. Apparently, it wasn't enough for them to just have the trophy and sneak it in. Now they want to be able to wave it around.
In front of everybody.
In front of everybody. So I think that's definitely going to lead to the extinction of elephants. And should we bring those back? I don't know. Will the knowledge that we can bring things back from extinction not just push us further towards destroying what's left of the wildlife on this planet?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it will. These people have no scruple. If they think, oh, you know, if I kill all these things, we can just bring them back, why wouldn't they just kill everything they want?
Yeah, exactly. Kill it all just for the instant gratification that only gratifies them.
Yeah.
But actually, if you're killing things and making money off it, how good is that for you as a living being?
I have no idea. Even regardless of the situation, even if you're desperate and that's the way you have to make your living, yeah, it must be soul-crushing.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
You know, the Europeans, when they first arrived in the New World, they inadvertently reintroduced horses to the continent where they flourished. Likewise, a fungus has rendered the American chestnut functionally extinct, meaning the species is still around, but not in its natural environment.
It's got no nuts. Not in this natural environment. Okay. Well, where is it?
It's in a lab. It's okay. Like there, but it can't
grow. There's like one sad tree in a lab by himself. Like,
a tree grows in a lab.
I know. That's sad. I like the idea, though, that tree was trying to get out.
Yeah, but what's also the legal framework for addressing de-extinction?
I don't know. I don't know if there's a legal framework for anything anymore.
Mm-mm.
I'm going to be quite honest with you. I feel like the rule of law is breaking down. We cannot keep the basic framework that we have. I don't know how we can layer this on top of it. Wasn't there a movie when we were kids, and I don't know if they went extinct or not. You remember the condor?
Yeah.
That was like a big thing that there were like three or four left. Yeah,
right.
And instead of learning the lesson of what happens when you mistreat the environment, you know, the focus was on saving the last few ones when you know that's not how it works. Like once you've decimated a population down to like three or four, it's over.
Yeah. Right,
but I just remember being like, we're trying to do this, we're trying to do that. It's like, dude, why didn't you try to not pollute the environment before? Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, because you don't care.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Then, there are a lot of questions. So legally and then...
ethically.
Yes. One of the toughest moral issues about the de-extinction is animal welfare. How many maimed, deformed, stillborn, quasi-mammoths, quasi-elephants is it worth to bring back the elephant? The mammoth, rather.
Hmm.
You know, I think about that too. Yeah.
Because now you're cruel.
Yeah.
Right? You're experimenting with these creatures that the more we interact with animals, the more like us we find them to be. Like they have feelings, you know, like I thought they had feelings anyway, but you know what I mean? We probably have feelings, they're social.
Mm-hmm.
So are you torturing somebody then? Like should they have more rights?
Right. Exactly.
You know?
And why are you spending money on this instead of saving life on the planet?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, why is this your focus? Why aren't you trying to prevent this? I feel like maybe that's two different ways of looking at the world. There are a lot of people out there who think technology will solve everything until we don't bother.
Mm-hmm.
But they told us that technology was going to solve pollution. But I don't see that's happening. It may be harder for us to see, and it may be in different forms, but I definitely feel like things are getting filthier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's definitely a lot more plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And they just found those whales that were beached. They died, and they were huge. I think they were sperm whales. They opened up their stomachs. Mm-hmm. Plastic.
Yep.
Plastic. So, I mean, if we lose, when an ecosystem starts to lose its large animals, I think that's just kind of like a bellwether for, like, what's coming down the mm-hmm. pipeline. Right? So, we'll see. Interesting. And on that note, good luck.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com. Thanks.